All right, let's go ahead and start. It's 5:03. Thank you everyone for joining. I know others will be joining. I see them joining as we speak. So we appreciate everyone taking the time to join this town hall for an update on where the AIRN Liquidation Trust is in terms of both real estate, litigation, administrative matters relating to the trust, the claims process. And the purpose of this town hall, as it has been in all the prior town halls, is to provide an update on all of those aspects of the case and to give you information that you may not necessarily be able to glean from pleadings that are filed in the docket or from just listening to a particular matter before the court. So as the beneficiaries of this trust, we want to give every investor as much information as possible. And so we have a PowerPoint that will walk through an agenda. Mike, if you want to turn to the agenda real quickly. In this presentation, we're going to go through what we have in the past as well. I'll give some introductions in a moment. We have the real estate update, litigation update. We'll talk about a little bit about the claims reconciliation and where we are with that. And obviously the questions and scheduling of the next town hall. But in terms of introductions, I'm Louis DeLucia of Ice Miller, and on the video with me is Michael Ott, also from Ice Miller, and some of our colleagues are also on the video participating, including Allison Fiedler and others. They are we are all counsel to the Liquidation Trust, and the Liquidation Trust representative is here as well, through Matthew Ward on the video, as well as two other individuals from AIRN Management, Rick Budd and Tommy Fierro, both of whom will be answering some questions as well as addressing the real estate tax and other issues. So with that introduction and those introductions made, I will turn it over to you, Rick, for purposes of starting us off with the real estate update.
Okay, great. Thanks, Louis, and good evening, everybody. I know Louis said tax and real estate, so this will be the real estate portion, and Tommy will ably handle the tax. I guess the next slide. This is the summary of the assets that that you own, and broken out by asset type, number of apartments, either built, approved, or in construction, right? So in excess of 2,600 units, the requisite parking spots, and then we've added marina slips for our marina down in Fort Myers, which we'll discuss in a moment. So the next slide starts with our completed projects, the station, which was finished up, fully leased. We've been waiting for our retail tenant to get a building permit. We're happy to report that that was obtained finally with West New York, the retail tenant, and all along they've been making their rental payments, right? So that's the best kind of tenant we could have. They have started their construction now. We hope, or they're targeting on or about the year end to finish it. We think that'll be a sensational addition to the station and to the neighborhood, which, as you'll see, or as you know, we are in the neighborhood. So that's the best and the greatest update we could have for the station. And we'll keep you posted on the progress that they're making on finishing out that space. So the next slide would be the Grand, just two blocks away, which has also been completed. We finished that. We got a CO in December. We are, it says 28% leased. We're a little over 30% leased now. So we're pretty pleased with that lease up, given that the winter, especially our winter this year, has not been the greatest leasing period. But we're at 30%, and encouraged by what we're seeing in terms of traffic. And it's a sensational looking building. So if you ever get a chance, or at least check out the website, because I think you'll be impressed. Next door, we go to the next slide. Oh, sorry, I jumped ahead. That's okay. Let's stay here. So good, right there. So we did other completed projects is ODR, right? Our project down in Del Rey, right? We completed the 5 single family houses in Del Rey. 3 of them sold in 2024. The last 2 have been slower. We had a contract on the 1068 parcel about 30 days ago that fell out. We don't know why. It wasn't far enough along that we got to keep a deposit. You know, the market's been very squirrely down there this winter. It's a combination of people concerned about the weather, people concerned about insurance, et cetera. And so, you know, this is our one situation where we're dealing with a retail buyer. So obviously it's somewhat challenging times to pin people down. But I think we did a price reduction relatively recently. We're very comfortable with our brokerage team, with Compass. So we do believe this will get moved. These 2 units will get moved this year. Okay, next slide. Okay, so I had jumped the gun before, but the Metro, right, is next door to the Grand. So this site, we have our building permit, right? We went through the process with West New York in terms of getting that reinstated because of the delay with the bankruptcy, but we're in good standing there. The building permit is active. We must start construction before the end of the year. We did commence site work initially to get things going. We are in the market for a construction loan. So we're talking to parties about providing that. And we've had good indications so far. But that's where we are, you know, with the Metro. And hopefully by next town hall, we'll have some more, you know, positive and definitive news for you. Next. So the Water Club in Philadelphia, also quite active. So these are 3 phases. We're only talking about phase 1, right, which is the 349 apartments. Again, we just we've retained the JLL firm to solicit construction loans. They've been in the market about a week, also showing, you know, good activity, good interest. So we're a ways away from finalizing candidates, finalizing offers, term sheets, et cetera. But we continue to be very excited about this opportunity, about this site, about this location. You know, we believe that we're seeing also that same sense of interest from credit providers, whether they're banks or debt funds. There seems to be a keen amount of interest. So we'll definitely you know, keep you posted as that moves forward. So the next slide, I think, is just again the Water Club phases that you can have a visual of. But we'll go to the next active project. So Legacy Harbor, if you recall, in Fort Myers, this is the marina piece that was destroyed by Hurricane Ian. So we've spent a lot of time trying to find the right mix here. We did identify a builder who was the original builder of the marina, Bellingham Marine, who's a national name, highly regarded. We signed a contract with them to rebuild the marina. We started with our pre-construction meeting last month. They're fully going ahead. The actual physical construction on the marina should start this quarter. Hopefully, you know, May, June, and anticipating, you know, again, a probably 9 to 10 month construction period to reinstate the 131 slips. As we've said before, the slip rates are substantially higher than they were before. We have our existing parties who we had dealt with. We have a waiting list of other parties interested. So we'll go out to market with a website, which we'll share with you, you know, in the next probably 3 months or so to get people interested, get them ready, and to hopefully get people signed up, you know, in advance. We also, at the same time, we're applying for permits for an additional 43 slips. That's not part of this construction. And those 43 slips would be for much larger boats. Larger boats means much larger slip rates, less competition. So anyway, we will get that completed hopefully within a year, and that'll just provide an option to for us or for whoever what might be here if they want to extend the marina and build the additional boats. So we might mention that we're building this. There's no debt here. So this will be finished up hopefully by year end. Okay, next slide. So Guttenberg Green, just to recall, this was under contract. It was a torturous contract. Anyway, we managed to get extracted from that with the help of Ice Miller. We are now free and clear. Our approvals were pulled or expired, I should say, with Guttenberg, with the town of Guttenberg. We've re-engaged with them. They are favorable to signing a developer's agreement with us, which has been drafted. We've signed it. Now it's just awaiting city planning board approval. In the meantime, one of the issues we had with the other buyer, one of a thousand, but a couple of the issues were the asbestos abatement. So we've completed that ourselves. So that's been finished. We're now doing demolition on the building that was there. So that'll be out of the way. So whether we elect to go forward to build this or we elect to sell the lot, we'll be in a perfect position of having an empty lot, no asbestos, no building, and a active development agreement with the city. So that's been turned around substantially from where we were a number of months ago. Next slide. So Legacy Harbor, right? So this is the upland piece, right? We just talked about the marina. So we've been working on the PUD application with council and architects and land planners. Last week, we were in front of the Fort Myers Planning Board and we got an approval to move forward. So that was a huge hurdle. This will now just go to the city council. We'll be in front of the city council next month for the final approval. And that will then, you know, seal up the amendment and put us in a perfect position to move forward. We've been contacted by several parties about interest in JVing the property or potentially buying. But we're waiting, we're engaging with people, but we know we need the PUD amendment finalized so that doesn't have any kind of overhang. It's taken longer than we thought. We thought it might be finished by the end of the year. So it's going to be until May. So anyway, that's the update there, but it's a very positive development having that PUD amendment in place and allowing additional units, up to 550 units. We don't have to build them. Nobody has to build them. You can build them part at a time, but having the approval is going to be quite valuable. Next slide. So our remaining two assets in Fort Lauderdale, there's not significant updates, you know, on either of these. We have some bottom fishers, for lack of a better term, floating around here. We continue to discuss. Our carrying costs are not substantial here, but the market is starting. There's development very close to us now going up, which is very, very helpful. So I think we'll have more positive developments on both the North Tower approval, which we're about to get final, and then the South Tower, which is the next slide. There we go. which we already have approval on for that. So that's the portfolio. Just want to encourage people that if they have questions at all, ever interest, somebody thinks they want to buy something in Delray, or you know, contact us. We're always happy. We're excited about these assets. We're happy to talk about them at any time. Any thoughts you have about any of them? A lot of these are complex deals, so this is not capturing everything that you might ask or everything that you might think of. But so we're always available, and reach us through NIRA info, or you know, a lot of people have our numbers and ice miller, et cetera. So whatever you need to know, let us know. Thank you.
All right. So in the litigation update, I think we have included within not just the litigation, some of the cases we will talk about in a little bit, not in great detail, but some of the claims objections, which are litigious as well and part of the litigation projections. But just some preliminary statements. Number one is, I apologize if my internet is spotty. My colleagues will jump in, hopefully, if I lose internet. I'm traveling in a bad location for internet. But litigation is inherently speculative. So we can't give any certainties as to what those recoveries will be. But more importantly is, this is highly confidential. We have discussed some of these matters in greater detail sometimes in the past. And some of those statements have been used by adversaries within the courtroom to say, well, you know, Mr. DeLucia said this, or Mr. Ott said that in one of the town halls, in an effort to undermine arguments made in court. So we are not going to be very granular on these litigations for that very purpose of not undermining the litigations that we are proceeding with. But with that said, I'll start the first couple of points, turn over to Mike to address the pending 7th omnibus claim objection and certain other filings. Mike, I can't hear you.
Sorry about that. We recently filed a 7th omnibus claim objection with respect to many of the remaining unsecured claims filed against the estate. These represent the vast majority now of the remaining claims that aren't otherwise tied up in litigation that we're pursuing. In the 7th omnibus objection, we are objecting to 67 claims totaling $7 million in the aggregate. The deadline for claimants to respond is April 22nd. And the hearing will be on April 29th. We'll probably follow the same path we did last time, which is we expect that most of the people, most of the claimants whose claims we objected to probably will not respond, and we'll just go forward with them. And with the others that do respond, we'll engage them to the extent we think it's necessary. We'll engage them in discussions to, you know, arrive at, you know, why we objected to the claim and what the resolution should be. So, it's the start of a process. Notice of satisfied claims is a notice we filed to list claims that have been paid and are allowed now. That includes 35 claims totaling just shy of about $4.1 million. If your claim is on that list and you do not believe you receive payment, then please reach out to us and let us know. And we'll figure out where the disconnect is and make sure that claim is paid and everything is handled appropriately. As it stands, we only have a small handful of unsecured claims left that have not yet had a formal objection filed that are not otherwise subject to litigation or negotiations. We are hopeful to resolve those. The fact that there are only a few claims that haven't been objected to formally yet doesn't mean that there's not still a number of claims that we are in process of negotiating and working out to get this resolved overall. And that takes time. It involves the exchange of documents and kind of a meeting of the minds in terms of how much parties are owed and, you know, what the strength of their claims are. So that's where we are right now in the claims reconciliation process. We are also still in the process of, you know, having discussions with non-contributing investors and bringing them on board to become contributing investors. Most of the remaining non-contributing investors are people who either have what we believe are $0 claims, or they are people who were insider promoters of the company, such as the Brian Harringtons of the world. We are in discussions with them with respect to complaints that we've been filed, to assert damages against them and clawback amounts they received as employees or otherwise. So most of the remaining non-contributing investor claims fall in that bucket. And we're hopeful to have most of those resolved in the near future. But again, that also takes time as people fight things out. So that is where we are in claims reconciliation. Lewis, I'll pass it back to you.
Thanks, Michael. All right. So in terms of new filings, let me just quickly state there in the litigation world, there are a minimum of three various buckets that we're going to touch upon. There are those pending litigations that are actually filed. You see on the docket, adversaries are engaged and the court is engaged. Second are those that are in mediation, where a case may have been filed or it's pre-filing and the parties have been referred to a mediator to attempt to resolve the matters before a litigation or soon after the litigation so that the parties can resolve it through mediation. And lastly, where we've made a fair amount of progress already is without any litigation even being commenced or even a mediation is commenced, a case is through the investigation in collaboration with Alvarez and Marcel, Rick Barry, and the entire AIRN team. And we develop a case, identify that case, and structure it, and then present it to our adversaries, and have been able to successfully obtain a number of settlements that have generated a substantial portion of the cash you see in the reports that have already been filed. So some of these cases and litigations are generating recoveries without a docket ever being filed, and that saves you money on both lawsuits, litigation costs, attorney's fees, and other costs. But in any event, some of the newest filings include a complaint that was filed against Van Doon and others within that firm for essentially accounting malfeasance, but also aiding and abetting securities fraud and other acts. That complaint is at its very beginning, but should generate, we hope, a substantial recovery for the investors. For a firm that did work over a period of time for NRIA during a period when the securities were being sold, and allegations are in that complaint, it's on the docket at Omni and available for review. The same is true with Alex Wolf and others, including an entity known as HAPPLE, H-A-P-P-L-E, I believe it is. That is a fraudulent transfer case for about just under $600,000 of funds that were transferred and paid by NRIA for unknown reasons to individuals affiliated with Nick Salzano that were identified through forensic analysis of the books and records of the company. And we have sued those individuals and entities for recovery of those funds. So that has been filed. And just to give you a taste, the reason why some of those complaints were filed was because we took our standard process, which is we took the draft complaints, sent it to the adversaries, and said, if you want to avoid litigation, you should speak to us about resolving these allegations because they're very substantial. We believe you have liability and we want you to settle it. Both parties declined to do so, and we are now litigating with them. So all these litigations that we have not filed, some of which include substantial complaints against banks, against accounting and advertising firms, as well as individuals in the public press, we have substantial complaints out to those entities and are discussing with them attempting to resolve it without litigation. But we have a date coming on us, which is June 7th, 2025, which is the expiration of the time frame to commence actions. We are going to be extending that for by way of motion, asking the court to extend it, and those parties who will be agreeing to extend it consensually will hopefully be signing what are called tolling agreements to do so. So Mike, you want to transfer the next slide? So as I mentioned, we have a number of pending litigations. Some of those who've been on the earlier calls may see these, which include Van Doon, Whipley, which went through a brief mediation. It was not successful. Sopola, which has gone through a number of motions to dismiss, and other actions by Sopola, which have survived. The action has survived. And we're hoping that those cases will progress towards a positive recovery for the trust. We obviously deal not only with the claims affirmatively against these entities, but also we deal with their claims that were filed for unpaid fees or otherwise against the trust, against NRIA, so that if those claims are reduced by you know, that they're seeking from the trust for unpaid fees or otherwise, that increases the cash available to you. And if we can recover affirmatively for their acts, we can increase the cash on the positive side. So that litigation, those litigations are moving forward. We also have active discussions with a major international law firm regarding mediation, which should be done this summer, meaning we already have selected a mediator and the process is moving forward. Some of this again is not so that to not disrupt or disrail potential positive discussions, the identity of some parties are not disclosed for purposes of making this these public statements because of the progress we're making already in trying to reach resolutions. So with that said, those discussions are ongoing actively. We are, with respect to pending litigation against U.S. Construction and McFillan, doing the same. We are in discussion with those folks for possible resolution. And if that doesn't work, U.S. Construction, you may recall, is an affiliate, meaning that it was run by the son of Nicholas Salzano, and an active player within construction and other transactions with NRIA. We're actively pursuing them into active settlement discussions as well to see if we can resolve that case as well as their substantial claims. We've already succeeded in November or so of last year in subordinating in excess of $22 million of their claims. I believe it was $23 million of their claims. They have a balance of an additional $32 million of additional claims filed, and we are in active discussion in attempting to resolve those as well as generate a positive cash recovery for the trust. With respect to advertisers, in addition to those folks I mentioned, there's at least 2 others who have draft complaints already prepared against them, very substantial national players against whom we are likely to commence litigation. We've already had discussions with their general counsel about trying to move forward with those claims or resolve them. But we have one that's been in litigation for a while, which is Media Effective. We obtained a judgment, you may recall, for roughly $4.6 million, but with the accrual of interest approaching $5 million, which was paid, but we have a claim against them for aiding and abetting securities fraud, which is on appeal to the district court, and that appeal is pending, and we're litigating that. Media Effective also filed a proof of claim, which we objected to. Insider Promoters, I think Michael mentioned this briefly in his earlier comments. There we also have identified and done some fairly substantial forensic analysis with Alvarez in identifying, and Rick Barry, identifying Harrington's, Cartosian's, Fallis's, and others. These are individuals who you will call were active players in promoting the securities, and we have sued them. There is litigation against them, and we are and we've analyzed assets and recovery. So the litigation strategy is not just the viability and the strength of the causes of action in litigation against these individuals. It's also the collectability that has to be analyzed. We don't want to spend a lot of money chasing individuals who may have great culpability but can't pay. We are in the process of defining the parameters of recovery against each of these individuals and these entities, and we believe we should be generating a good recovery out of those claims. We are also in litigation, but moving into mediation with DMR and Cheveria and others with respect to their claims which we commenced in the bankruptcy court, but will likely move to mediation and then arbitration if mediation fails for construction-related litigation, as well as subordination or disallowance of their claims against the trust. There are many actions, of course, as you know, that are against some of the bad actors, too. Many of them have been settled in terms of some of the transfers to insider and family members of Salzano. We've gotten some cash payments from those folks, all of which is included with the numbers you've seen, some of the questions you've asked about, for example, the cash, substantial amounts of cash that are in the accounts of the NRIA or AIRN, I should say. Those funds are in part from these recoveries from litigation parties and or prior to litigation with whom we've settled. So Want to do the next slide? As I mentioned, we anticipate that if we do not make progress in consensual discussions with certain banks, there are very substantial banks, national banks you've all heard of, that we are actively discussing, and they have draft complaints against them in their hands as we sit here. They are represented by very substantial firms, law firms, that have historically represented them and defended them in litigations like this. But we are prepared to move forward against these banks aggressively if we cannot come to a resolution. The claims have been developed from the information we obtained in discovery, as well as from the company's records, as well, and we believe that through the investigations and interviews that we've done, that the claims are very well supported. As I mentioned, there are law firms that we have already settled with, and others that we anticipate bringing actions against. But they are in either active discussion, as I mentioned, with that multinational one, or smaller firms with whom we are seeking recovery of fraudulent transfers. I mentioned the advertisers, Bloomberg, Bill O'Reilly, and others. Those are some of the targets we're looking at, and those are in active either discussion, or they have been made aware of the claims that are likely to be brought against them if we cannot resolve things through the investigation. Next slide. These are some of the active mediations that have been going on, like I mentioned. Whipfley is one of the accounting firms. One of the questions, and we may answer some of your questions, I believe Rick answered one of them earlier on about who could be spoken to, when and if there's an interest in a property, you reach out to Rick. And so some of the questions asked in the portal may be answered during our presentations here. So we will address them if we can during at the end when we get to the questions. But one question that was asked was about the EB-5 investors. In particular, could you please provide an update on Mona Shaw EB-5 case? And so, as you can see, that was and is in mediation. We have made progress towards a settlement where there will be a cash payment to the trust. And the more importantly for the investors is that settlement we anticipate would allow the EB-5 investors' claims to be extracted essentially from the Mona Shaw quagmire and their entities and be allowed as contributing investors within the trust. That would also reduce certain reserves that you've seen on those on the statements that were filed with the court, and some of those restricted funds you've seen on those statements, because some of those funds that are reserved are for claims that are not yet contributing investor claims. So those claims would theoretically then, if becoming contributing investors, reduce those reserves. So there's a 360 degree, if you wish, application here. It's not just claims reconciliation process, but the litigation affects the allowance of claims even within the litigations, and it affects the balance sheets that you see as well. So that is what is coordinated from our end with the trustee, with ARN, and the other advisors. But I've already mentioned all of these are in mediation, and others will likely go into mediation if we can bring those litigations there, because sometimes we found that that can lead towards a positive settlement. Next slide. So one of the questions that was asked was, do I have to file a proof of claim, or what do I do about restitution? And again, this, we want to make sure that you have this information. This is the contact information for the person responsible at the DOJ in connection with the submission of these claims and your rights to restitution. We want to make sure that everyone has it. We've provided it in prior town halls, but we wanted to do so again. Next. All right, now we're going to turn, but if you want, one of the questions raised by an attendee and investor is, could we show that slide 1 again, which I think is the real estate slide for you, Rick. And if we could do that before we get to the questions, maybe it's a good break to do so. I think this person wanted to see it.
This is the slide that Tim asked to see. Please let me know. I'm a lot more information than this, than the table of contents.
And we're making this available for people too, right? So you don't have to take take notes.
We can make it available.
So we'll post this on the Omni website on the investor reports page, which you can locate on the dashboard. So you'll be able to pull this report and look through it on your own at a later time.
Right, so let's go back to the questions.
Jump back to the investor tax questions and invite Tommy to, this was the most, given the time of year, it's not surprising, this was the most frequent question we received was, when are we going to get our K-1s? Tommy, take it away.
Yeah, so basically, I think we went over this in probably the town hall, and I want to say November, but just to remind everyone that effective August 2023, which is when the, you know, the bankruptcy plan was confirmed, there was a change in the entity structure where, you know, NRIA and the fund operated as a partnership, whereas, you know, now we are in a liquidating trust. That means that the tax documents you receive for that period and any period going forward will be in the form of a grantor letter as opposed to a K-1. So you should have received a grantor letter for the period of August 2023 through December 2023. If you have not, you can email us at the email address below. The 2024 grantor letters will be, they'll be released in September 2025. We also received questions about, you know, how to report this information on your tax returns. On page 2 of the PDF that you'll receive from us, which is the first substantive page of the document itself, shows exactly which line items on your tax return that this information should be entered into. But as always with tax documents, we're always going to urge you to speak with your personal tax advisors, you know, with respect to any documents you receive. The 2021 and 2022 AARs, you know, which many people refer to as the amendments of the prior years, will be completed at some point in 2025. These are not going to trigger a prior year amendment. Based on the way that the forms are set up, it gets reported in the year that the push-out statement is received by you. So you'll receive those forms in 2025. There'll be a 2025 tax item that get reported on your personal tax returns in 2026. Now, if you have any questions on, you know, any of this stuff, document requests, whether it's accounting or real estate, the info@nria.net email goes to both Rick and myself. So, you know, if it relates to the accounting information, you'll get a response from me. If it relates to a more direct real estate question, you know, you either get a response from me or Rick. But as always, feel free to reach out anytime, and we're happy to help however we can.
Thank you, Tommy. There was one question about taxes that I'd like you to answer. The question is, whom to contact to correct an error in the K-1? I'm going to assume this is an error in the K-1 or the grantor letter. Can you answer how they should go about, or if we're able to correct errors in past K-1s, what the process is?
Yeah, any sort of question along those lines, just shoot us an email to the info@nria.net, right, depending on the validity or whether or not an actual change is needed to be made. You know, we'll address it on a case-by-case basis, but just please include as much detail as possible in that email, and I'll take a look at it as soon as possible.
With that, I think we're ready to move on to the other investor questions. The most frequent question we received, besides the question of when we're going to receive our K-1s or grantor letters, is whether or not we expect there to be another distribution this year. So Lewis, you want to go ahead and answer that one?
Sure. So we are on a regular basis speaking with not only the liquidation trustee, of course, but the advisory board in connection with doing what we can on reducing claims that are not appropriate claims to be paid out of the trust, seeking to recover assets through litigation or claims through litigation, selling real estate in order to maximize the recovery, while preserving value or assets within the trust to maintain the trust for purposes of completing the projects that Rick walked through with you, as well as the litigation, but also to make a distribution and preserve claims and funds for those claimants whose claims are still disputed, but need to be resolved. And then they would get whatever apportionate share of distribution they're entitled to. So there's a lot in terms of managing the funds. We are in the process of doing that. And in doing that again for the purposes of trying to generate and find funds available for a second distribution. As you know, one distribution has already been made. There is a possibility that a second distribution could be made in the relative near future, but that is not certain by any means until certain of the claims that we're litigating are resolved and the claims reconciliation process is further resolved. But everything is being done possible to accelerate and maximize distributions.
The next question is administration needs to find a way to transfer money through ACH, at least for those who prefer, otherwise too much risk with a physical check. So the question of how to make distributions in this case comes up quite a bit. There are pluses and minuses with each of the methods, a paper check or a ACH payment, that you know, they have their costs, and they also have their risks. And while they're, you know, both have risks, it's possible for somebody to steal a check. It's possible for an ACH payment to be sent to the wrong address. At the end of the day, there's more of a paper trail involved with checks, physical checks. So it's easier and safer to make sure that the funds are going to the right person. It's easier and safer when the funds have not been sent to the right person to correct the error, as opposed to an ACH payment that goes to the wrong account. That money is in all likelihood just gone. So that is why we are proceeding this way. We, you know, every once in a while we have further discussions as to whether it would be appropriate to switch to a different method, and you know, we haven't decided to do that. We are in certain instances, for example, with a larger IRA trust custodians, we've been making some bulk wire transfers that they then distribute among the accounts that they have in their possession. That's done because that's a really cost-effective way of getting it done. We also have one person to talk to confirm the amount, the check, and that it's been received. That's easy enough. If we had to do that with 2,000 different investors, it becomes very cumbersome very quickly. So that's why we're currently sticking with physical checks. Again, if we make a decision, if we decide to change that, though, we'll let everybody know. The next question, estimated return of capital and time to close. Lewis, what are your thoughts on
that? That's the same question about distribution, estimated return of capital. That's really distributions and time to close. I think that's really referring, I assume, to when the case would either close or when that return of capital could be generated. It's the same question as the question I answered about the next available distribution. So, like I mentioned, it's dependent on a number of factors, including claims reconciliation, claim allowance, and the recoveries and the generation of proceeds of real estate sales, which are all active moving targets, but everyone on the trust side is working towards getting that recovery and that distribution as soon as possible.
The next question, which we answered during the discussion, but I'm just going to bring up a quick answer here because it's also one of the questions that was submitted in the Q&A, is what is the status of the Mona Shaw EB-5 case, specifically with respect to the EB-5 investors? And I'll just basically reiterate what Lewis already said. We're in discussions with Mona Shaw. They're relatively advanced at this point. We're hopeful that we'll be able to reach a resolution soon. As part of those discussions, we are very mindful of the EB-5 investor claims that are currently invested in her name, and we are working with them to make sure that those claims are treated appropriately. We believe that once the settlement has been completed, we should be in a position, hopefully, to make a distribution to those investors as contributing investors. But there are a number of moving parts, and these things are complicated and take time. We are going to move as expeditiously as possible, though, to make sure that that happens, because we understand that there are investors who are waiting. Trust administration. All right, please explain the trust legal and professional fees of around 4 million. The number's kind of cut off there, 4.8 million, the administrative costs of 862,000, the advisory board legal and professional fees of 202,000 for the prior quarter. Lewis?
I'm sorry, in terms of for the park, so that question is actually fairly straightforward. In addition to the litigation, which is self-evident, that generates legal fees in connection with recoveries, much of which is reflected in the cash on hand, is the administration of this trust, which includes the legal fees of the trust legal professional fees, which you see in that 4.4 million, that really reflects not only the legal fees related to litigation, but also claims reconciliation, reporting requirements of the trust, sales of real estate, working on the real estate development and projects, which you see there. These are legal fees and professional fees incurred. It also includes professional fees for Omni, for the data servers that we use for maintaining records and or litigation data that comes in substantial volume by maintaining that data securely and for litigation and for administration purposes. So there's a number of fees that go into that number. Administrative costs are actually out of pocket costs, probably including salaries and other costs of the trust administration. The advisory board and legal professional fees are fees and expenses of counsel to the advisory board, which is Oak and Hollander. Those are counsel to the advisory board itself. So those are the numbers, and those are the costs associated with administering the trust.
Okay. Litigation questions. What is the status of the RICO 3X ruling? Lewis?
Yeah, sure. Many people have focused on the RICO because I mentioned it in one of our prior town halls. The RICO count is largely in one or two of the litigations against parties, but the real focus of that RICO claim is related to Salzano and Scaturo's other criminal enterprise, if you wish. Now that they've been convicted, or at least pled, such as Scaturo convicted as to Salzano, the RICO counts are not quite as prominent, particularly if we settle those claims at very substantial, hopefully, benefit to the trust. So that is not necessarily going to be a ruling as much as it likely will be in those pending actions. It'll likely be a claim related to likely be resolved through settlement discussions and a recovery in that litigation. That doesn't mean that RICO can't be or may not be asserted in other claims and other litigations against parties we haven't sued yet. But RICO is basically subsumed within the resolution of the Salzano Scaturo criminal actions.
It's important to keep in mind in litigation that there are a couple of different criteria in which we assess a case. So one is the strength of our claims. If we believe we have strong claims, that's obviously the first step. We need to have strong claims in order to recover. The second is how much in damages we believe were sustained as a result of the conduct of the person we're suing. That's also important because that kind of gives us a ceiling on how much we're going to recover. The third one, which is often overlooked, is very not very, very present for us in bankruptcy cases, how much can they afford to pay? So it's great to get a judgment against somebody for $180 million multiplied times 3. But if they only have $20 million, you're only going to get $20 million, even if you have a judgment of $600 million or whatever that would be. So while there's a lot of leverage provided for us with RICO cases, it is very helpful in negotiations, very helpful in discovery. The fact that there's a 3-time recovery is a good leverage point, but it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get that money, especially if they don't have it. The next question, which I can answer, will creditors who profited from the Ponzi scheme be asked to return money? That is exactly what we've been doing with all the litigation, with all the claim objections. We have been, all these negotiations, we have been going to the people that profited from the fraud, and we have been asked, and we have been demanding that they pay their fair share. They assist in making the investors whole. That is the purpose of the litigation that we are pursuing for the most part. So that is.
Mike, I can't hear you. Can everyone hear him?
I think you may have muted yourself. No.
Hear you, Mike. Right. So I think that's basically the answer to that question, though. Criminal cases. Do I need to file a separate claim regarding criminal cases? I think that the question on that, it was answered a little bit earlier. Mike, if you want to show that slide again regarding the reclamation, the restitution, sorry. I think we do not have anything to do with the criminal action. That's entirely controlled by the Department of Justice. So here's the person that you would need to contact for the Criminal Justice Department, the Department of Criminal Justice, for getting your claim recognized within the DOJ restitution process, an animal within itself. So that's the person you should reach out to. So that's the answer to that question.
Can you
yes, we hear you now, Mike.
No, we didn't.
Now we don't. So next, real estate. Who do I contact with regarding purchasing property from the portfolio? I think we've already answered that question as well. Rick did earlier during his discussion. Feel free to reach out to Rick if you have an interest in property. Then we have questions. I think those are the questions. There's maybe one that we've missed. Let me make sure we don't miss any. Well, you have over 200 million in cash. Why can't you pay another distribution soon? That is the same question, just in a different version of how and when distributions can be made. And I think we answered that verbally already. Let's go into the Q&A section. Some of those we've attempted during the discussion to answer for you, but we'll go and some have been answered already in the presentation verbally, but we'll go into some of these. It seems everyone is making millions from the investors' losses. The investors are not making anything. Everything is being done for purposes of trying to generate a recovery. We recognize that there's a cost and there are substantial costs associated with generating these recoveries. But I think that the plan that was voted on and the distributions that were generated, that were anticipated in the disclosure statement, will likely be exceeded. You know, we believe that there's going to be a good outcome here, but we can't guarantee how much. But we do believe that there's going to be a good outcome, and everyone's doing everything they can to generate the maximum recovery for you. Certainly, the advisory board is overseeing all of it and looking very carefully at everything that's being done to make sure that there's a maximum recovery. The trustee is diligent on all of that and making sure that there's a maximum recovery for everyone. Next. How are decisions made regarding when to cash out and out of any individual real estate investment? Is time value of money taken into account, Rick?
Sure. There's a couple of related questions in there, so I'll try to summarize them all at once. And that's a great question. There's another question, which was why not sell these property or sell properties now as opposed to develop them, which is really at the core of the whole question. So you have a very experienced real estate team. So we've seen cycles up and down. We've seen distress. We've seen exuberance. But we come from an IRR world, right? Internal rates of return. So every investment is extensively modeled. I don't want to bore people, but it's a grueling process, taking into account every expenditure, every possible downside, and that's the way conclusions are made. That's the way recommendations are made to reinvest, to invest in the property, and to go back. We haven't built every property. There have been a number of properties that we've sold. So it's probably $60 million on ballpark, where we determined it makes more sense just to sell this as is rather than to develop it. The modeling, those decisions then get made based upon the timing of the market. So right now, as we all know, we're in a dynamic market period of, you know, ever moving interest rates. The general tendency seems to be down. So if you're rooting at home, you're rooting for lower rates, you're rooting for lower cap rates, and that's going to create higher multiples when we sell the assets. It never has made sense to sell assets midstream. So partial construction, we faced that during the bankruptcy and right afterwards with the station, there was questions about just sell it as it is. We would not have and generated enough money to pay the debt, and we could have given the property back. Now we were looking at, you know, I don't want to forecast exact numbers, but, you know, 8-figure return on that property. So that's a question. There was a question about the time value. Yes, 100%. That's all part of the model, is the time value of money and making those decisions about selling, holding. And remember, you have all multifamily properties. So as they're completed, right, they're generating income. So it isn't like you are constantly, you know, bleeding out money. Things like the station, the Grand will get there, the Metro, these will start generating cash. It makes it easier to make a decision. But we factor in, there was another question, we factor in every expense. So if we have legal expenses, if we have planning board expenses, whatever it is, it's calculated in our return. So again, we're happy. It's laborious. We love doing it. And we're happy to discuss it in as much detail as anybody would like.
Hear me now?
Thank you. Go ahead, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, so there's a question here from PC, which I assume is Peter Camparisi, asking about the unaudited balance sheets and whether the total equity is a measure of what additional funds would be returned to investors. And you have to keep in mind that when you're talking about the balance sheet, that everything is held there at book value, which is basically a tax accounting. It's not a fair market value. It's not an appraised value or anything like that. So, you know, and that number changes as we, you know, recalculating amounts that are due on contingent liabilities. So that number is frequently in flux. So I wouldn't rely too heavily on what that number is to try and estimate what the total distribution is going to be in the case. Similarly, the next question from Jim Boyles, love the asset summary. One suggestion, it may be beneficial to add an estimated range of property values in their current state, and projection should property be completed, ballpark values. There are a couple of issues and concerns with including values, even value ranges in those kinds of documents, especially because these are going to become public documents. We're going to release these publicly. We're kind of on some level anchoring in the expectations for how much these are worth. You know, future buyers might see them. It might set their expectations. You know, we don't want to be irrationally exuberant in what the values are to try and attract a higher offer down the road, but we also don't want to, you know, be too conservative with it. So it's a risky business to try and include values with respect to the properties, even ballpark values. I don't know, Rick, if you agree with that, or if you have any other thoughts on that particular question.
Yeah, no, the value piece, obviously we don't want to discuss values, you know, in an open forum, because if we're going to sell a property, whatever, we like to add an air of mystery to what we're expecting and what the market might bear. But again, from a granular standpoint, we're happy to discuss with people, you know, how, what we're doing, what we're expecting. We just don't want to, you know, broadcast it.
And then another question is, based on the active projects, litigation information you have, any projection on percentage recovery? Along the same lines that you just heard, you know, we don't like dodging questions, and this is not a dodge. It is an actual answer, which is that based on the current economic environment, you can imagine there are uncertainties related to the sales and development of real estate. The same is certainly true with respect to litigation and the uncertainties of the judge you get assigned and or the nature of that litigation as facts are developed in depositions and otherwise. So the percentage cannot be guaranteed or projected, and we'd hate to give you a number that turns out incorrect and then you're dismayed. So simply put, we are very bullish on the recoveries here, but cannot give you a percentage with any certainty. I think those are all the questions.
I think the question from Steve F at 5:17 p.m.
5:17 p.m. Bear with me. I think that's what Rick was answering. Well, no, okay.
It's the second sentence. That's what I was suggesting.
second sentence, which is, aren't the ongoing fees for all the professionals involved in this case materially eating up the potential additional monies earned? What percentage of the entire potential proceeds are going to fees? All right, so we certainly don't have a percentage number analysis done, but you don't get the recoveries. You don't sell the real estate. You don't have the reports that are generated without financial advisors. You don't have zoning approvals, permit approvals, litigation with buyers who walk from transactions, who were going to sell or buy the property and walk from the contract. You don't have recoveries from banks who held defraud. You don't have any of those recoveries without the professional fees involved or the administrative costs associated with the accounting, reporting, and financial work. So, yes, there is absolutely erosion by the professional fees, but you can be guaranteed that without the incurrence of those professional fees, you'd be at zero. So let that be very clear, be very close to zero unless you did a fire auction of the as is current stats of the properties, just in an auction. You'd have no other greater upside to the recoveries. The fees and expenses incurred of developing the properties, working with the approvals, getting the township approvals, fighting with, like we did with the West New York, to get to the, who were, wanted to stop the development of that project. We were able to, through the bankruptcy court, get that project back on course. Litigate against bad actors, banks, law firms that have generated, that have facilitated willingly or unwillingly the damages you sustained. Those are litigations that are sought to pursue your recoveries, and we could all be stopped, at which point the recoveries also stop.
Yeah, the fee, it's not like there's just a monthly rate that we're getting paid. The fees we're incurring here, the fees that Alvarez is incurring, the fees that everybody here is incurring are directly related to the work that is being performed. So just turning off this, selling everything now, there's still be a number of issues in terms of claim reconciliation, getting the money out, reporting, that kind of thing, that would still be incurred as we try to fulfill our roles as fiduciaries of the estate. So.
That's that question. Any other questions left unanswered or?
Looking through it,
doesn't look like it.
In terms of, there's a question here about personal contact information. I'm going to send you a note privately so you can contact me.
Yeah, I told her to reach out to you. I already did that.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I think that those are all the questions.
All right. Next slide, Mike. I think you've already answered that and said that if you don't have an initial distribution to reach out to you. And now I think we turn it over to the representative of the liquidation trustee, which is Matthew Ward, to discuss the fact we have the next town hall June 11th and to make a final statement.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, just regarding the answer to the last question, you know, nobody likes to incur fees. That's whether it's legal fees or real estate consulting fees, financial advisory fees, or litigation support fees. But it is a fact of life that it takes money to make money. And especially that's true in unwinding a Ponzi scheme of $500 million. So the distribution that the investors have already received, that's a result of the work of the people on this call. And there will be more distributions, multiple more distributions. As we settle with US construction, as we continue to pursue the litigation, as we sell the exciting real estate projects that Rick mentioned, all of that will lead to multiple more distributions. But it takes work to get there, and that takes expense. So I hope that answered that question. I just wanted to kind of supplement what Lewis and Michael had said there. But we tried to go into a little more detail tonight on some of the exciting real estate projects like the Grand and the Metro. You know, it's exciting to see the Grand get leased up. And you know, once that leasing is completed, we'll be bringing that to market. And then, of course, watching the Metro go from construction to completion is going to be, you know, I eagerly await that happening as well. So we are making headway on the claims reconciliation. We just filed one more omnibus objection. We're whittling those down. We're very close to the end of those. Have just a handful of objections of claims left. not objections to claim, but handful of claims left that we are reconciling. Litigation, we still have a number of litigation matters that are pending, and then some that we might have to bring if we can't resolve those consensually. I know there's pretty large mediation scheduled for this summer, and there's some other mediations. And then unfortunately, a couple of these, we just recently filed complaints because they didn't resolve through mediation. We're trying to resolve them through mediation, but understand, I mean, there's people, I can tell the investors right now that there are people on this call, not investors, but there are probably other people that have registered to participate in this town hall that are targets of that litigation. And if they hear me, we are chasing them. We are chasing the dollars, and we will try to resolve it through mediation and consensually. And if we can't, we're going to bring complaints. And we did that recently, and we are going to continue to do it. And we are going to chase the dollars for the investors, for the benefit of investors. That's what we're doing. So there are a lot of moving parts here still. We're making progress on all of them. We appreciate the investors bearing with us. It is a long process, but we are making headway. So I look forward to seeing you guys this summer. The next meeting is scheduled for June 11th. That's a Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern. So go ahead and get registered, get your questions submitted, and look forward to seeing everybody there.
Terrific. Thank you, Matthew. We have no further questions that I'm aware of. There's one question that was just says my name. I'm not sure what that is, but other than that, if you have a question, Yulia, feel free to ask it. I could wait a second, but otherwise, I thank everyone for their time. I think that closes everything. I don't think I'm missing anything else, right, folks? I think we've covered the agenda. And thank you all for your time, and hopefully it was informative.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.